Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community. And welcome to Circle Talk Radio, a production of Circle Sanctuary's Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts. Tonight, we're getting a pre-recorded presentation tonight from back in February 16th, 2020, Reverend Selena Fox, among others, including Andrew Bear and Char Bear from Circle Sanctuary, were joined in a panel at this past year's PantheaCon. And the panel's topic was eco-activism. So we're going to have a chance to listen to what was discussed at the panel on eco-activism at this past PantheaCon 2020, which was happened on February 16th, 2020.
Very first Thursday on April 22nd, 1970, I was at the College of William and Mary in Virginia, and back then, our environmental education took the form of teach-ins, and we focused on helping to get the Chesapeake Bay well. And since that very first Earth Day, I've been involved in doing Earth Day events, helping with them and actually organizing them. We have Earth Day at Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, 200-acre nature preserve. That's also a home for pagans of many paths. And today in this panel, there'll be a chance to hear some things from each of us, but there is also an opportunity for you all to be able to give some input, to ask some questions. One of the things that we do with our environmental activism is not only do education, but we do ceremony, and we have bardic dimensions. And we have one of our favorite bards right here with us. Celia has been doing music many places and storytelling and poetry and sacred laughter. And she was part of a collaborative effort of a lot of our bardic friends, the Green Album. So she's going to start us out with a song so we can tune in to eco music for a bit.
Yay, thank you. Hello, everybody. Good to see you. This is the song that I contributed to the Green Album. A group of different musicians got together and each wrote a song specifically for the album, and 25% of the proceeds go to Save the Rainforest, goes to the Rainforest Trust. So this is the song I wrote for it. To that big box store, I do not need the crap they sell there anymore. And I'm satisfied to sympathize for the little things are the big things. This next verse is for Char and Andrew and myself, because we all drive Priuses.
All three,
the same color. We just parked next to each other and found that out. I will not drive a car that guzzles gas just to get there wild and just to get there fast. I'm a green earth girl in a black old world, and I'm proud to put my money where my mouth is. Do you enjoy your entry from the factory? Do you enjoy the selected rain? Do you like telling stories over forest fires? Do you enjoy the thrill of hurricanes? That drive-through window don't produce my food. I know it's fat and it's designed to taste real good, but it's plain to see it's killing you and me to eat so very far from the field. Do you enjoy the constant question, mommy, why vacation photos of wilderness cement? Do you enjoy your barbecue up on the roof, 'cause it's flooding and you're waiting for the government? Whoa. Now this next verse has a little bit of a story to it. I had a fan come up to me once and say, Celia, how do you do it? I said, well, what do you mean? How can you be so positive and creative and open in a world where so much tragedy is going on in the news? I said, oh, okay, I get what you're saying. Well, that's easy. I do not watch the news. I've been news fasting for a long time because I'm an empath. If I pick that stuff up, it's going to tear me down. I consider part of my job as a bard to stay clean so that I have a perspective. So that's what this next verse is about. That television don't produce my news. I'm much more picky about the truth I choose. All this hate and war will bring us more. I mean, don't ignore it, but gosh, don't let it control you. Do you enjoy the constant question, mommy, why vacation photos of wilderness cement? Do you enjoy your barbecue up on the roof, 'cause it's flooded and you're waiting for the government? Oh, I will not waste my breath on talking small. I dedicate my voice to the love of it all. And I still believe in love and peace, and I have given my whole life to this dream. Do you enjoy your airstick from the factory? Do you enjoy the acid rain? Do you like telling stories all the forest fires? Do you enjoy the thrill of hurricanes? We keep doing what we do. We keep doing what we do. We keep doing what we do, and we'll get more of the same. I will not walk into that big box store.
Thank you, Celia. And I say green blessings to you. So we're the first part. We're going to each share some perspectives and some information. I'm going to begin by just giving you a bit of an overview of the eco-activism, not only that I'm involved with, but the Circle Sanctuary community. Then Andrew will give us some updates on some information about why we need eco-activism. What is happening with the planet? Char is going to give some pragmatic stuff. I'm going to share some pointers of things that we can do in our personal lives and with others. And then we will have group input, discussion, Q&A, and then end with some eco chants at the end. And Circle Sanctuary actually not only emerged out of the growth of the craft in paganism from the 1960s. It was founded in 1974, but it has its roots in Earth Day and the environmental movement. Myself personally, I began my activism with civil rights activism for racial equality in 1963, was the first of the work that I did was to support the March on Washington for racial equality with Martin Luther King Jr. I grew up in Virginia. I went to college at the College of William and Mary in Virginia. I found it was really important if we were talking about social change, is not only looking at what was happening with humans and how they were treating each other, but how are we in relation with the larger circle of nature of which we are a part? And that's been a core principle with me. Some people have children. I have nature preserves, festivals, and projects. And so Circle Sanctuary was born in 1974. We got land in 1983. And we not only have that land as a place where we can converge community and do ceremonies, but it's a place where we can recharge and we can listen to nature. It has become a model for a number of pagan land projects. And the other environmental piece that we are a part of has to do with greening the end of life. We know it with greening life, well after death, need to green that too. So we actually have one of the first green cemeteries in North America, established in 1995, and we expanded it in 2010 to do green burial, full body burial. We partner with scientists. We partner with government agencies. We also network with a range of eco-activists, people and organizations, some very diverse from each other, some not necessarily thrilled about each other being part of a larger piece. We do a lot of work with interreligious work, the Parliament of the World's Religions. The centennial was held in 1993, and we've been involved since it rebirthed at that time. We have science that happens at our nature preserve. We're involved in prairie restoration, reforestation, wetland conservation. We do a lot of work with wildlife, and we have 8 different types of bats that are on our land, a wide variety of plants and creatures. And one of the things that we like to do for Earth Day is not only have information presented, but eco-action. Might be tree planting. One year we actually went to the stream and took water samples because one of our community members is a water scientist. And we looked for indicators of how clean that water is, and I'm happy to say very clean. We also not only do the eco action and the eco information, but we do eco rights. And one of the things that I will be doing in the next few weeks on podcasts and in talks that I'm doing is sharing ways to create personal rituals, household rituals, community rituals, spiritual as well as rituals that can be in the secular realm. Indeed, some of the chants that I've created as part of environmental work, I've taken to environmental scientific conferences where a large number of the people were not religious at all, and perhaps they would also say not spiritual. And within our community, we have a range of freethinkers to spiritual, to deeply religious, combos, and I'm not going to comment on the part of some people, right? So you've got the range. And I think it's really important to have safe places where we can commune with nature, we can connect with each other. So while we're in Wisconsin, we do work not only across the U.S., but globally. And a lot of what we've been doing recently has been expanding our work in cyberspace, doing teaching by Zoom and podcasts. And we have multi-language podcasts, Pagans of the World, where one of our ministers in training, who is multilingual, Spanish and English, has connected with people from Brazil and other places where Portuguese is spoken and Spanish as well as English. And so we are expanding our way of connecting with pagans internationally, not only to share information about pagan practices, but the eco-activism piece is hardwired in everything that we do. We think it's important to be informed, to take a look at what's happening, and when we hear the stuff that may be upsetting, to be able to hold ourselves in a centered place where we can take that information in and then let that inspire things that will motivate not only us, but others to get some corrective action happening. And with that, I pass this to Andrew.
Thank you. Well, before I begin, just want to say that what I'm going to share is the more recent statistics as far as the predicament we're in, and I was appreciating the song that Sylvia shared, and said, don't ignore it, but don't let it control you. So I think that's a good stance to take as we listen to what I'm going to share. And I mentioned in my introduction that I'm a chaplain in the hospital, and you know what I've come to see is so often we try to avoid suffering. There's a limit to the amount of suffering we can take in, and so many times I will hear either a patient that I'm visiting or their family not wanting information to be shared. It might be the children that just received the lab tests and the patient hasn't been told, and they'll say, don't tell my mom the results because it's just going to depress her. Or sometimes it's the patient themselves that has a new cancer diagnosis and they say, don't tell my children, that's not going to change anything. And so there's a natural inclination to try to protect ourselves and our loved ones from suffering and from difficult news. But what I've also found is that when it comes down to it, people really do want to know what's going on, because that influences, you know, decisions we make and the way we decide we want to live our lives. So it's in that spirit that I'm going to share a few areas of the latest climate reports. I want to begin by talking about carbon in the atmosphere, how much carbon is in the atmosphere. Jim Hansen is one of our country's preeminent climatologists who worked for NASA's Goddard Institute. And Jim Hansen. Mm-hmm. And also I want to say that I think we have a sign-in sheet. We can write your email. I can email this to anyone that would like the details of the report also.
Yeah, the handouts will be followed up if you sign the email.
Yeah.
So it's a way to do it.
So Jim Hansen's team is charged with answering the question, how much carbon can we have in the atmosphere and still have a planet that will support civilization, basically? And the number that he came up with, him and his team came up with, was 350 parts per million. And for those of you who are aware of the environmental organization, 350.org, that's how they got their name. The goal was to keep the carbon at 350 parts per million or less. And this was in 2007, when the CO2 levels were already 383. So when this came out, the level of carbon was already too high. On February 10th, just last week, carbon in the atmosphere reached 416 parts per million, which is a record. That's the highest that's ever been recorded since the Pliocene epoch, which was 2.6 to 5.3 million years ago. So there's not been this much carbon in the atmosphere since humans have existed on the planet. And that number is projected to increase to 417 by May due to the fires in Australia. So the next area I want to talk about is rising temperatures. Since industrial times in the 1880s, we have warmed the planet by an additional 1.1 degrees Celsius. As many or most or perhaps all of you know, the Paris Agreement set a goal to keep climate emissions under 2 degrees Celsius, and with an encouragement to nations to make adjustments to try to shoot for 1.5 degree to try to keep it from going over 1.5, but the actual agreement was 2 degrees. The thing to note about this is that it takes between 10 and 30 years for current carbon emissions to result in higher temperatures. So right now, with the temperature increase we're currently experiencing, this was from the carbon that was released prior to the 1990s. So the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere right now, we're not going to start feeling the effects for another 10 to 30 years. So even if we completely stopped putting emissions into the atmosphere today, like cut it down to zero, the global temperatures will continue to rise based on the carbon that's already in the atmosphere that hasn't registered in higher temperatures. This is known as committed warming or carbon lag, to the lag between the carbon in the atmosphere and feeling its effects. And since the 1990s, we have increased our global carbon emissions by 60%. And also, once carbon is released into the atmosphere and has its effect, it takes hundreds to thousands of years before the temperatures start coming down. So what we're kind of baking in right now is going to last for thousands of years. So even if we stopped putting carbon into the atmosphere today, we will likely exceed 1.5 degrees temperature increase. But the thing is, we're not stopping right now. In fact, we're increasing. In 2018, there was a 2.7% increase. And in a bit of good news, 2019, the increase in emissions was only 0.6. So it was still an increase, but it's slowed down from the previous years. So if there's a bit of good news in what I'm sharing, that's it. So relish it. Bask in that only 0.6 degree of rise last. That's right. 0.6%, yeah, increase. So many scientists are projecting that we have already locked in a 2 degree temperature rise and that we are on track for 4 degrees Celsius temperature rise by the end of the century. Interesting, I just read reports from both BP and Shell, and reports that they make to their shareholders. They're addressing climate change because a lot of their shareholders are nervous about, is this going to be a good investment? And they're projecting out a world that has between 4 and 5 degrees temperature rise, and trying to assure their shareholders that they're taking steps to continue being a profitable company even with 4 to 5 degrees temperature rise. Yeah, it's pretty unbelievable. So the last thing I want to talk about is, as far as the components of warming, is melting in the Arctic and now the Antarctic. So Peter Waddams is professor of ocean physics and head of the polar physics group at the University of Cambridge. He's considered the world expert on global ice cap melting. And he's spent literally decades underneath the ice caps studying with this team of researchers. And most of us have seen images from space of the area of polar ice shrinking and shrinking. And he says what's even more important than the area is the volume, which you can only measure from underneath. And he has reported that since 1990, he reports that 75% of the volume of the ice has melted in the past 30 years. So we've already lost 75% of the ice caps.
It's the North Ice Cap.
Yes, that's the Arctic, not the Antarctic. So James Anderson, who's professor of atmospheric chemistry at Harvard, he's the one that alerted us that CFCs were responsible for the ozone hole last century. He's predicting there will be ice-free summers by 2022, give or take. So that's 2.5 years from now. That's the Arctic. Yeah, this is all the Arctic right now. And once you lose the ice in the Arctic, there's something called the albedo effect. So when you lose that white reflective surface that's reflecting a lot of radiation back into outer space, you've got the dark blue ocean that's absorbing. And this creates a feedback loop where the less ice, the less reflective ability, the more warming, which melts more ice, and it creates a feedback loop. Another consequence of the melting of the Arctic and the Antarctic is sea level rise, because Greenland and Antarctica will begin, well, Greenland's already melting and Antarctica is also starting to melt now. On February 6th of this year, that was just last week, Antarctica recorded its hottest temperature ever at 65 degrees Fahrenheit. Then 3 days later, on February 9th, they had a new record of 69.35 degrees Fahrenheit. So this is shorts and t-shirt weather in Antarctica. Two new records set just last week. A news release that was dated January 29th, so very current reports, reported that for the first time, they've measured warm water in the Thwaite Glacier, which scientists refer to the Doomsday Glacier because it's particularly susceptible. And if it ever melted, it would raise sea levels by 3 feet. The author of the report said that the fact that there's warm water now and that it's melting under the glacier suggests that it might be undergoing an unstoppable retreat that has huge implications for global sea level rise, unquote. So the Antarctic is becoming unstable as well. Okay, feedback loops. I want to mention a few of these. I mentioned the albedo effect, where the diminishing ice allows the ocean to warm more, which melts more ice. Other one is methane release. Methane is a much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. It's 84 times as powerful. As temperatures rise, methane is being released from the permafrost and from the floors of our oceans. And as these release the methane, it increases temperatures, which leads to more methane release, and that's a feedback cycle. Wildfires. More wildfires are putting more carbon into the atmosphere, which leads to more warming, which leads to drier and drought conditions and more wildfires. There's also carbon being emitted from soils. As global temperatures rise, more carbon is released from the soil. The warming creates more release from the soil. So these are all feedback loops that are happening now. And it's interesting that these do not make it into the reports by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, that produces reports. And the reason for this is, and the IPCC tends to be on the conservative side because it's consensus-based. Everything that's in that report has broad consensus. Scientists know that feedback loops are happening, but there's not a consensus on how bad it's going to be. So that's why the results of feedback loops are not integrated into the projections of the IPCC. So they know it's happening, they know it's bad, but those aren't in the reports. So with these feedback loops, we are now facing exponential global warming that's not linear anymore. Without these feedback loops, it's easy to project in a linear way what's the future's going to bring, but with these feedback loops, it's no longer exponential. And what climate scientists are now calling runaway climate change. So one more section I'm going to talk about is the implications for human society. We've heard news stories, but what's it mean for human civilization? In a recent interview with Canadian scientist David Suzuki, he notes that we are on a trajectory for 4 degrees temperature increase. If we if with business as usual, if we don't take dramatic steps, which we're not taking. Right now we're on course for 4 degrees temperature increase, and other scientists have also projected 4 to 5 Celsius. That's true, that's true, that's true.
We're talking 10 degrees.
Yes, yes. Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. So there was a recent climate symposium gathered to discuss the implications of a 4 degrees Celsius, or is that 10 degrees?
Approximately.
Yeah, I haven't done the calculations. And they concluded that in a world of with that much warming, that fewer than 1 billion people would survive. Kevin Anderson at UK's Tyndall Center for Climate Change reported the same thing. His research is that only 10% of the planet's human population would survive. In May of 2019, Johan Rockström of the Stockholm Resilience Center and his team reported that it's difficult to see how we would accommodate even 1 billion people on the planet. So with 4 degree temperature rise Celsius, we're looking at a very turbulent future with most of the people on the planet not surviving. The effects will be crop failure, water scarcity, more intense heat waves, storms, floods, wildfires, and disease. And culturally, there will be social or societal collapse and lots of civil conflict and wars over resources. So this is where we are headed with business as usual. Some scientists are considering the possibility of human extinction even by the end of the century, although that's not a majority view. A new report published just this past month, January of 2020, signed by more than 11,000 scientists in 153 countries, warns, this is the quote, that we clearly and unequivocally face a climate emergency and are encouraging dramatic action. So at this time, I'm going to invite us all to take a deep breath in and a breath out.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew, so much for very succinctly putting together the banner newsflash items about the reality of the climate crisis. What I'm going to talk about is competing worldviews, some immediate resources you can use right now, and a way to sort of manage a response that I might suggest to you with respect to the practices that we all do as pagans. So, I want to invite you for a second to think about this information you've heard. And, you know, we refer to the Earth a lot as Gaia, or we might say Oceana or Terra, but we think of the Earth as a meta-organism, a living, if not being, meta-organism. So imagine yourself for a moment picturing Gaia alive, and imagine you've got this parasite invasion that's trying to kill you off. Seriously. It's polluting the little thin membrane all around you and literally changing the composition of that. It's dumping pollution into your skin and bone and muscles and your landfills and polluting your circulatory system with plastic, a byproduct of the fossil fuel industry. Let me ask you, what would you do as a living system? What would you do? And how might you fight back? Any of you medically here? Shake it out. You burn it out, flood it out, shake it out. That's what the planet's doing. I want to give you just a real quick sense of the hydrological cycle that's on steroids right now. Because all of that sense of the circulatory system of the planet, we all learned back in elementary school about how the nice rain falls on the earth and it lands on the streams and the creeks and it all sort of accumulates in the tributaries and all goes down to the ocean, and then the ocean, you know, sometimes will evaporate a lot of it, which forms clouds, and the clouds will go back over the land, and then the precipitation is like that. And it's got a nice natural balance that sustains the world, just like a nice, clean circulatory system and lymphatic system are doing for us. And what's happening with the changing of the composition of the atmosphere and the heating, the global warming of the Earth, is that is now just zooming off charts. So that what we're seeing is we're seeing a feedback loop in the hydrological cycle of the planet. What's happening is that precipitation has gone bonkers. You know that the water warming so much sends up huge amounts of water into the atmosphere, and they're creating all of the repeating hurricanes, which are offshore. These monster storms we've never seen before. When they hit landfall, they become these rain bombs, these atmospheric rivers. We had one here in 2017, right in San Jose, right here. It wasn't El Nino, it was a rain bomb. It hit us, an atmospheric river. And then it turns into these internal hurricanes that crash, and we see them continually happening in these areas where there's a lot of this activity. And you'll notice the Gulf, which has been a massive oil manufacturing area, consistently is getting hit with these kinds of things. And then we also see that the same water that's being sucked up out of the ocean, even though we're getting flooded and drenched, is that it sucks the same water up out of the land as well. So you get a drought cycle continuing. And then when a rain bomb hits, you get a lot of erosion and landslide because there isn't the water table there sustaining the soil. So these are kind of the things we're seeing happening now. And with increased drought, even though you had great rainfall, all of a sudden it dries, you've got all this fuel, you get more wildfires. In California alone, our wildfire season now in the last 10 years has expanded another 50 days a year. We now have some out-of-control fires that are happening starting in March and going through November. So that's an example of a cascade, right? So what the science is screaming at us, what Gaia is telling us, those of us who are in tune with the Earth, those of us who hold an ecocentric worldview, who understand that we are a part of nature, not apart from nature, that we are here in tune to the planet. I mean, what's the planet telling you? Is there any question? She's trying to shake off the parasite, and she's going to do it. And I got to tell you, I do take some comfort in that because it is not only for me about human beings. I do take some comfort in knowing that she will go on. She is going to balance herself. I have absolute faith in that. So I'm now going to address this from a spiritual and moral crisis, but also an opportunity for, hello, pagan worldview to come in and really take front and center a leading role in the possibility of a more sustainable and just society, because that is a trajectory that is also out there. We're getting two pictures. We painted the dire picture for you, which is business as usual under the very human egocentric worldview that's been operating since the Industrial Revolution, and it's been plundering everything, indigenous peoples, animals, everything, and this is the trajectory that we're on with that. This has been the dominant worldview. But the other one, the ecocentric worldview, is also rising. And it is rising faster than I could imagine. I couldn't believe the Academy Award, Joaquin Phoenix, his acceptance speech. Who saw that? Okay, a few here. But that is one of our popular culture's most visible moments every year around the world. He won Best Actor. And he got up and he basically said, we're all complicit in participating in an egocentric worldview that's essentially killing the planet, and yet we need to really bring forward an ecocentric worldview in which we find solutions that benefit humans, animals, and the planet going forward. And we're so creative, we're so capable of doing this. What the science is also telling us, folks, is that yes, we can do that right now. If we could flip the switch on policy and politics right now, we have, and it's been verified time and time again, we have the means and the capability to fuel all of the human energy needs on this planet through clean solar, wind, and hydro right now. We have that capacity. And what's stopping that? What's the barrier to that? And it's the paradigm continuing, right? It's the paradigm continuing. Always done it this way. So, you know, and people in facing change, I see your hand. We'll come back to questions in a minute if you don't mind. But people in response to change, you know, often have a fight, flight, or freeze response. There's no planet B. Some people might be gearing up to go to planet B, but that's a whole nother journey. There's no planet B, and if I have a choice, I'm going to stay on this beautiful earth that I love and know and, you know, care for. This is my home. This is our home. This is our home. So do I freeze? I've gone through periods of that. I have sat there in despair, in abject horror and shock at the news. Anyone else felt that? I've even tried to numb myself out with certain substances, you know, saying, hey, this is cultural or whatever, and that didn't work so well. It didn't do anything for anybody else. And it doesn't help me to be fit. I want to be fit, body, mind, and spirit for this. So I see a lot of heads nodding. So fight, then. But what kind of fight? Well, one of the resources I want to point you to right now, I'm going to invite you, if you have a cell phone, the signaling here is pretty good. I've got Verizon. This is, if I were to point anyone to one sort of website that is your primer, your opening primer for the emerging climate movement, who's in it, and what they're doing right now, you just want one place to go. If you can, go to strikewithus.org. All one word, strikewithus.org. If you can see it, and coming up, it says here, 66 days until Earth Day. Register your event. Read our op-ed, join the movement. I'm going to read to you, for those of you who don't have the benefit of looking at it. 2020 is a critical year for climate action. As we approach the U.S. elections and the consequences of climate change are becoming ever more clear and dire with each passing day, a new powerful wave of the climate movement has been swelling. Young people around the world have been rising up to defend our future, and have been going on strike every week all over the planet for months. On September 20th last year, and again on November 29th and December 6th, adults joined us. We meant it when we said we are prepared to take the movement to the next level. We recently announced our plans for 3 days of striking, launching on the 50th anniversary of Earth Day, April 22nd, and ending on April 24th. On Wednesday, April 22nd, we will show our collective power and unity with millions upon millions of young people and adults participating in thousands of strikes across the country. On this historic day of climate action, we will center and hear from Indigenous people and people of color and reflect on our personal connections to the earth. On Thursday, April 23rd, we will participate in community action with young people on college campuses demanding their schools divest from fossil fuels, while adults target financial institutions with a clear ask, quit profiting off the destruction of our planet. We are not open for plunder anymore. None of our brothers and sisters of the air, of the water, of the sky, of the ground, under the ground, of the upper, middle, lower worlds are yours to plunder anymore. We're creating a firewall of protection around them. On Friday, April 24th, we will focus on escalated actions targeting elected officials with the demand that the climate crisis is addressed urgently. As the finale of the 3 days of climate action, the central focus of the day is on voter registration, with an ask that eligible voters register and pledge to use their voice and vote. So led by a diverse coalition of youth-led and adult-led organizations, the Strike Coalition is shuttling us into a new era of climate action across the world. And I want you to see who the organizations are. There's Divest Ed, Youth Coalition, Earth Uprising, International Indigenous Youth Council, the Sunrise Movement, which is sponsoring the Green New Deal. They're a big deal here. Extinction Rebellion, one that is, they're the bomb when it comes to nonviolent civil disobedience and staging guerrilla theater using combinations of incredible creativity along with not very, very well-crafted nonviolent civil disobedience. The Youth Climate Strike, Fridays for Future, you know Thunberg, you also know Jane Fonda now out there, Future Coalition, the Adult Coalition, 350.org, Green Faith, March On, Our Children's Trust, Union of Concerned Scientists, ACE, Greenpeace, Mothers Out Front, Mobilizing for a Livable Climate, Oxfam, Center for Biological Diversity, the Hip Hop Caucus, Move On, Planet 9/11, A Creative Call to Action, the Center for Popular Democracy, the Interfaith Power and Light, National Wildlife Federation, CEU, Climate Hawks Vote, Labor Network for Sustainability, Next Gen America, Podcast America, Sierra Club, Earth Day Network, LCV, NRDC, Stop the Money Pipeline, Strike Sponsors, Earth's Call, Climate Emergency Fund, Wallace Global Fund. Woo! This is around one climate strike. The coalitions that are developing now all over the world are breathtaking. And you know what's wonderful for me when I think of a just, more just future? I'm 59. The very first Earth Day, I was there at 9 years old. The fossil fuel industry, the transportation industry, the large agricultural industries, they've known about what they're doing to the planet since the first Earth Day was upon us. They don't care. They will not stop out of their own self-interest. Okay? Democratization all over the world is what is being called for, and the children are calling us out. Every single person, my generation, and I'm on the edge of Boomer and X, XYZ generations are looking at us and going, what the hell? What the hell? I don't want to be patronized. I don't want to be schooled. I don't want you to tell me you got 50 years in Congress, because yeah, how did we get here? I mean, they are not amused. They're not interested. They just want to see us show up and join them in what they're doing. Be schooled by them, mentor them when appropriate, you know. And I feel that why I get so passionate about this for the pagan community is that, A, this is not a partisan issue. This is a worldview battle. We are in a struggle for which worldview is now going to arise and take hold in the 21st century. And that's all the time we got to play with it. Are we going to reach for a positive, more sustainable, and just society in which so many of the barriers we've dealt with in the 20th century are breaking down because the kids are inviting absolutely everybody into this movement. They don't care about your sexual orientation, your gender identification, your class, how many degrees you have, your race, what nation you come from. They're like, great, come on in. This is about humanity. So that is amazing as a new sort of common ground to come to this fight from that. And to imagine with the technology we do have available at this time and everything that's being developed in biomimicry and green architecture and, you know, regenerative agriculture, all the possibilities that are right there, if we can somehow overcome the egocentric worldview that is still dominant in many of the political systems in a lot of our countries. So this election year is huge, and it's not partisan. Anyone who says it's partisan is trying to make it partisan. This is existential, and it really is a moral and spiritual crisis informed by which worldview is driving your values and your conscience. So, if you sign the sign-in sheet there. I've got a four-page handout on personal things you can do, on organizations you can align with, but this is one. Strike with us. I also have a Facebook page, which I call my repository of all climate news stuff. It's the good, bad, ugly, the victorious, the hopeful, it's everything, and it's all credible sources. So if you're looking for another just one feed, you can go to sacredearthcommunity.cbear. And you'll find whatever I'm posting there, which is daily. That's sacredearthcommunity.cbear.
That's
Sorry, that's in the letter C, B-E-A-R. One other thing I'll say before I yield back the mic is, again, as an eco-chaplain, you know, I hear an awful lot from people, oh, what do I do? I'm just so overwhelmed. It's horrifying. I just feel, And I might like to suggest something that I do. I'll commend it to you, and you can use a process like this for yourself if it's helpful. Because I certainly go there, and it is compassion fatigue. It is grief. The first thing that I go to ground with is I first acknowledge. The first thing I do is acknowledge. Like, I really had a meltdown when I was watching koalas, you know, and kangaroos in Australia, and then seeing it's becoming its own climate system. And I went through another, you know, little black pit there. And then the first thing I went to ground with was acknowledging. I acknowledged all of the biodiversity there. I couldn't believe the reports kept talking about 30 houses. Oh, we've lost 33 lives. You know, I'm like, we've lost a billion animals. We've lost a billion animals. So I went to ground doing what pagans do and acknowledged the biodiversity being affected. I called out in my prayers to the koalas, to the joeys, to the wombats, to everybody. I thanked the wombats for taking other animals into their shelters, as they were seen to do. I called to the kookaburras. I acknowledged the indigenous people. Because if we don't acknowledge, then we continue to commodify and objectify the natural world, as the egocentric worldview has done. They're just resources. I acknowledge them. I name them. I feel it's important, just as we name the indigenous lands we're on, to name our brothers and sisters in the plant and animal species who dwell there as well, because this is not simply a human experience. So I acknowledge. Then I let myself really grieve. I let myself feel the feelings I'm feeling. I don't bottle them up. And what I do then in ritual is I throw my love at it. I throw my love at it with everything I've got. We've got a wonderful altar at home, and I just, you know, in the interest of generating positive feedback loop, I throw all my love at those I'm mourning. Honoring our beloved dead, we go there because we love them. I throw my love back at them, and that helps. And then I go to my spirit guides. No matter who they are, whether you're tuning into the harmonics of the earth, whether you speak to Bridget or Gaia, whether you dream with shamanic guides, I go to them and I ask for guidance. I make sure that I don't just turn to the news, I try to tune in to what my spirit, what my goddess, what my planet is saying to me. And I try to listen deeply, and there are all kinds of techniques for doing that. And then I get myself to community. You look at any of those. I personally have found the Climate Reality Core Extinction Rebellion to be wonderful, and I get myself to that activism community. And by being in community, it's a lot more fun, it's a lot more energizing, a lot more supportive. I don't try to do this alone. And then get to community and get involved. And I do it while paying attention to how I'm managing the energy. Not just in terms of my own burnout or grief, but in terms of what I'm invoking. As I'm doing energy, I'm not trying to invoke negativity. I'm always trying to positively frame myself, how to do whatever we're doing, framing it towards something life-affirming, toward possibility, towards something positive, because that's what you hold on to. That's the lifeline we need to hold on to. So that's a simple response, and with that, I'll shut up now. And I'll yield the mic, and hopefully we have some questions.
So have we sent some cards around for questions? And those of you who would like to submit questions, Dree's coming around. And while she's doing that, we're going to do a few eco chants. Think globally, act locally. 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 Clean earth, clean air, clean energy, clean water, clean earth, clean air, clean energy, clean water, clean earth, clean air, clean energy, clean water, clean earth, clean air, clean energy, clean water. Be part of the solution and not the pollution. Be part of the solution and not the pollution. Be part of the solution and not the pollution. Be part of the solution and not the pollution. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. Reduce, reuse, recycle. And from the 70s, give a hoot, don't pollute. Give a hoot, don't pollute. Give a hoot, don't pollute. Bring human change to climate change. Bring human change to climate change. Bring human change to climate change. Awaken all humankind. Take action while there is time. Bring human change to climate change. Bring human change to climate change. Bring human change to climate change. Awaken all humankind. Take action while there is time. Bring human change to climate change. Bring human change to climate change.
One that's, I don't know if this is on, yeah.
One that you'll hear a lot, that's been used a lot. The seas are rising and so are we. The seas are rising and so are we. The seas are rising and so are we. And then another one that's come out from the kids is, how dare you? How dare you? Done. How dare you? Right? Try yelling that in mass over and over again. How dare you? It kind of starts to put in perspective, right? Yeah. We have some questions. And while we just look at these, there's another. If you go to Extinction Rebellion, they have something incredibly creative right now. It came out of Australia. They took the 1970s song Staying Alive, and everybody is learning the same dance moves to that. It's called Discobedience. And it's taken off all over the place, demanding that the government tell the truth and admit it's a climate crisis. This is amazing. You go to YouTube and look up Discobedience, Australia. And what you see is that masses of people are doing the Staying Alive like that over and over in the streets while parading, some wearing... We're going to be doing it. We're going to be doing it in Santa Cruz on the 28th of this month in front of Wells Fargo. It's a very well... And we've been rehearsing. Yep. And it's great.
The actual bank's name will not be disclosed at this point.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Financial institutions. And some people get arrested, and they're very well organized. But if you look it up, this is going to make your heart sing, because you can see the kind of creativity, joy, and whoopee that's going into this movement. And then, of course, at the end, they all drop dead, and they're quiet, and you see just masses. Very chilling, very effective. Anyway, all right.
So we've got questions. Thank you, thank you. And as we're looking them over, I'll give just a few pointers. Something very easy that you can do is to get some image of the Earth. It might be a copy of that photo that was taken on a moon mission. It might be a little globe like this. Actually get an image of the Earth and have it in your habitat, your home. And why do I say that? Helps you to think globally. We can get so caught up in day-to-day life with the minutia of day-to-day life. I think it is really important to take a few moments out and to envision the planet. And to take the next step from that is to spend moments holding the intention, the image that healing is possible, change is possible. whether you take it the form of sending love, whether it is chanting, drumming, doing some other practice, to actually hold that image and to use it to focus your spiritual intention for well-being for the planet. Earth, air, fire, water, spirit. Pay attention to those elements globally and in your local area. What's happening with the earth? Waste removal in your local area. How clean is the area in your local, the air in your local area? What is going on with energy in your local area? Who's going green? Who's being clean? How good is the water quality in your local area? Who has it? Who is not having it? And spirit, what's going on with the vibes in your local area? Also paying attention to the planet as a whole. I like watching the NASA channel. Why? It allows me to look at the planet as a whole, and they actually have images of the planet from the International Space Station. They're beautiful images, and they have very meditative music. So take a break from sorting through the problems and taking action, and also have some good energy. So what I'm going to do is pass this over to Char. Why don't you pick a question, and we'll give some input.
Well, I've got three. I got three. Can you hear me? I got three here that kind of are the same. Oh yeah. Well, this goes right into this one here. These two together. Okay. Well, the first one is sort of how do you talk to people who are resistant to this topic? Is kind of the general theme I'm getting. How to have conversations about the climate crisis with people who are good people, just trying to live their lives, right? What do I say to friends who say that unless their primary candidate wins, they won't vote, and how to convince Trump supporters that climate change is real? So, yeah, I've been having or facilitating these kinds of conversations now pretty intensely for 3 years, specific to this. And empathetic communication really is helpful here, but it really depends. Okay, I'm going to ask you honestly to think about this before you engage the conversation. Do I care what they think? Do I really want a relationship with them, or do I really not care? Okay, this is important, because if you really are trying to build bridges and build a relationship, empathetic communication is helpful. You want to speak your own truth. You want to talk about why it matters to you, and don't less is more, because understand a lot of the time, if you're dealing with someone who is rigid in their thinking already, there's no rational argument you're going to be sharing that's going to change their mind. It's all emotional. So where I go to there is I'll tell a story about seeing a beautiful place or a beautiful species I love and they are no more, and being aware of how some of our activities are affecting that. And so what I'm going to do about it is this and that, and hoping that on an emotional level they'll be able to identify with something like that themselves. Because if people are captivated by an other, we're inclined to fall in love with that other. And if we do, we want to protect and care for that other. So that's generating some positive connection for them to something. I do not go head-to-head trying to have a logical debate with someone who is presenting with rigid mindset. It's just frustrating, and it's not going to do anything for me. I'll just say, okay, well, thank you very much. I hear you. I don't agree. That's not where I'm coming from, and I move on, quite honestly. If I'm talking now, sociology, you know, teaches us that about 3.5% of the population are going to be upstanders, meaning most of us out there on any given day are just trying to live our lives and may or may not be super active. But when you look at uprisings that have turned into movements, it's only taken about 3.5% of the population to organize and lead it. So you have to ask yourself, am I ready to be an upstander? If so, align with some of the movements that are already happening. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. They're off and running. Join up with them. Learn from them. Get energy from them, right? And be part of that upstanding part of society. If not, if your gift set is to bake cookies to support the kids who really want to be talking about climate change, great, do that with love and get out there and do that. If you're an educator, do that. If you want to do rituals, do that, you know? You can make personal choices always, but what you're going to do on an uprising social level, really think through what you feel able to do. Okay, good.
I do want to add on to that also. Is this working?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the strategies of Extinction Rebellion is doing a lot of grassroots organizing, and they've noticed that in a lot of environmental organizing world, when you're trying to bring people together, a new organization forms, it starts and it builds pretty quickly, and then the first meeting you might have 30 people there, the next meeting you've got 50 or 70 people there, then you get 100 people there, and then you get like 90 people there, and then you get like 70 people there, it kind of flattens out, because it's the same pretty liberal environmental activists in the area that show up to everything. And in order to build a successful movement, we've got to get beyond that. This is needs to be a much broader coalition. And so what they're advocating is going to communities or small rural communities that might be more conservative, sponsor talks there, and you might get 5 people. But those 5 people, if you talk to them and just let them know what's going on, will be energized and then say, I want to come back in 2 weeks. Can you invite more friends? And you just slowly build it, but it's like we've got to start building bridges across the usual groups that we habitually connect with and start reaching out and connecting with others and bringing folks on board, because climate change doesn't matter what your demographic is, it's going to affect all of us.
I think the question about how to deal with like family members and people you know that have really different viewpoints, I think part of it is how you hold yourself as you have conversations and hearing things that may contradict what you know, being able to hold it and not engage in a rage at that point, and instead be able to have people say their piece, acknowledge that you've heard what they said, and then say, well, I've heard this, I have had this experience similar to what you're talking about, and saying, well, there are a lot of different viewpoints and there are a lot of things happening and I am really concerned. I've seen this happen, blah, blah, blah. I know firsthand about this. And I do think if you can have a center response within yourself so that you act rather than react, then you get out of people needing to stand their ground. And sometimes making a joke can cause a laughter, can cause a disruption in the dynamic. I'm going to do this next question. You mentioned the Parliament of the World's Religions and interfaith work. How do you see the Christian community joining in interfaith climate action? Will the evangelicals come on board, and are there signs of this already? Alliances. I have direct experience with this. Indeed, even years back, the Aldo Leopold Center in Madison has an Earth Day. Circle Sanctuary, from time to time, will have tables at this big Earth Day conference. 2 spiritual tables at the Earth Day conference, Circle Sanctuary, Pagan, and Creation Care, Evangelical Christian. These alliances have been going on for more than a decade, and increasingly, there are coalitions forming, not only of members of different Christian denominations, but clergy. One has just emerged in South Central Wisconsin. I was invited to be part of it. And Green Faith, which was on the list that Char mentioned, Interfaith Power and Light, United Religions Initiative, Parliament of the World's Religions, connecting with these interreligious resources, going to their website, looking under environment, you can find a lot of information about this. And I'm very excited to see that people are finding ways of working together across different faith traditions and free thinkers. Atheists, agnostics, and secular humanists are also joining in without there being meltdowns amongst the religiously engaged. So, good news.
So you want to take the question?
And I would just add to that, there's also I'm not positive of the name of it, but there's a group called the Evangelical Environmental Network or Evangelical Climate Action. I can't remember exactly what it's called. It's, if I had my computer, I could Google it. Evangelical Environmental Network, I think is what it's called. And they've been around since, I think, the 90s. And they've got a pretty broad membership. I think they've been growing, and they are doing the organizing and educating within the evangelical Christian community.
Not long ago, too, there was published the Green Bible, which you can get on Kindle, that has offered an awful lot of Christian ecocentric worldview and sort of countermanding a lot of the traditional exegesis of Genesis. So, I mean, you know, there are things developing. When it comes to alt-right, fascism, you know, people who are extremely conservative religiously and tying up their identity with a lot of things outside of just sacred word, that's a much more complicated answer, and it's something all of us are asking the question about all the time. I want to address the question around what do we need to do to actually take carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas out of the atmosphere? I do want to say here, please do sign up on the Circle Sanctuary sheet. Circle Sanctuary is a great resource, and I put together 4 pages, carefully considered, of real resources that you can use. And it includes Drawdown, which is really the go-to text, still is, that contains, I forget if it's 100 or 150 things. It's a solid 100 things that in every sector of society can be doing right now to actually take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. And you'll see it all the time. Jane Goodall is out there planting more trees than anybody else. I mean, we humans are technologically genius, but there's been no better technology on this planet than trees for actually doing this. It also includes ocean vegetation as well. If we don't acidify that out, what the seaweed has done is just amazing. Our own kelp forests out here are phenomenal at doing that. But there is a lot of good news. We don't have time in this forum to talk about all the incredible potential that is literally waiting for us to transfer policy and money to help just springboard. That's the kind of systemic change that we need to look at to stop the destruction on the one hand, move into a green economy, a green ecology, a Green New Deal, however it's going to manifest, and start taking off with some of these strategies that have already been, you know, determined to really be effective. We're just kind of waiting for that. So, yeah.
This is a quick add-on from an activist perspective, and I just want to say I haven't always been an activist. Years ago, I just, you know, raising our son together and realizing what kind of a world he was going to inherit if we don't turn this around, I just decided I need to take to the streets and start doing everything I can. Something I want to suggest is it's important to make personal changes in our lifestyle to live as simply and as ecologically conscious as possible. But if you think of, if you participate with environmental activist organizations and stop a pipeline from being built, and if you calculate how much carbon would have gone into the atmosphere had that pipeline be built, it's like that's going to do a lot more than any one person can do themselves. So I definitely don't want to suggest we don't do everything we can personally, but also want to really lift up that environmental activism, when it's successful, and it is often successful, it has a big impact on getting carbon out of the atmosphere.
I have a question here. How to contend with mass media propaganda, spreading climate denialism, disinformation, minimization. Well, one of the amazing things about our world today with social media, that it can amplify a lot of different signals. So I would suggest that you come up with at least three different feeds that are reliable, real facts, commitment to good journalism, fact-checking, science. Pay attention to them and boost the signal. There is negativity out there, but there's also opportunity for us to amplify the signal of correct information as well as to motivate people. I'm going to pass it around for some other input about this.
Well, you know, that's essentially what I've tried to do with the sacredearthcommunity.cbear is for my own research, for, you know, discussions and talk, but also to be able to forward posts that are coming from credible, legitimate sources. And EcoWatch, the World Economic Forum, the Climate Reality, the Guardian, you know, sources that, really are not promoting a particular agenda, but are just trying to really get the facts out. And that can easily be forwarded and posted. There are petitions, there are links to other things like that. So I think we all have to be very, very aware of what the propaganda sites and sources are. And I encourage everyone to assert yourself. You know, you're always free to contact them and say, you guys are bullshit. I mean, basically, I think we need to get feisty. Just like someone had a question about the air conditioning in the room, nothing's stopping any of us from going to the people in the venue and going, can you turn the air conditioning off? It's just really not green, and we're trying to do a green thing. Politely, nicely, but we, you know, assert yourself. I've gone into Costco when they were still selling Monsanto and said, guys, do you realize they're, and they laughed at me, and sure enough, months later, they're now pulling it off the shelf. So I'm not trying to be a nasty woman. I'm trying to be a nice, nasty woman, but I mean, we need to assert. We need to assert things when we know something's wrong or not helpful. You're gently trying to point it out, make requests, and just continue that.
And I would add that if it's an elected official that is putting out misinformation, that you give some corrective feedback. To call
Absolutely.
Them up, yes, you can email, but you will have a more powerful voice if you call them up.
They
have to deal with you, and they need to make a record of this. And feisty is good, and I'm going to see if Andrew has some more.
Yeah, no, I don't have anything to add to that.
Do you guys know?
That sounds good. Speak up, and you know, I'm going in the act. You can call your elected official, speak to them on the phone, you can also visit, and if they continue doing it, you can bring a bunch of friends over there and just chain yourself to the door and refuse to leave, and the news will show up, and then it becomes more interesting.
Actually, here in the Silicon Valley, one of the most effective groups is Indivisible, and Al Gore was really, I mean, they really are a lesson in civic engagement for anybody, and they're really helping to mobilize young people. But Orchard City Indivisible, that meets in Campbell on Tuesday nights, they are a phenomenal group. They have an absolutely fantastic eco task force. I was with them an awful lot. But look up Indivisible and OCI there, but there's an Indivisible San Jose. They're great. Do you all know about ResistBot? Do you know about the 5-Call app? Okay, if you go to Messenger, type in Resist, and ResistBot is fabulous, because what you'll get is something coming in and saying, do you want to resist? And it's very simple. I will do a tutorial for anyone afterward who wants to meet with me in the hall. I'll show you this. It is the fastest, easiest way to send an email. You can say, I want to send it to Congress, to my senator, and then you can write your message, do done. When you're done, they'll say, would you like me to tweet that for you? Yes, please. Tweet that, send it off. Would you, if it's long, would you like me to publish this in your local paper for you? Yes, I'd like that. Thank you. They send it off and do it. It's incredible. It's an amazing app. The other one is the 5-Call app, where if you download that one, they always have a running list of all the current legislative action going on. And you pick 5 of them, and you make 5 phone calls a day. They ask you to do, okay, a week. But you can do it. And it keeps you abreast of everything that's before Congress right now. So those two are very rapid ways.
well, we got the call that we only have a few minutes left, so we'll each have a moment to, I guess, say a closing statement. And I will say, I am thankful you all are here. While we didn't get through all the questions, this is an evolving project. We are doing eco-ministry, so stay tuned for what Circle Sanctuary is going to be doing. I hope that everyone will come up with some way to not only celebrate Earth Day, but to get other people aware of that and the different things happening.
Thanks very much for doing all this. I just wanted to make some announcements that are pertinent to all of you here. And I'm involved in two interfaith environmental things. One is called MICA, which is Marine Interfaith Climate Action.
Yay.
And I could tell you a lot of things about Marine all the time, but I will. I could tell you a lot of things about Marine, but I won't waste the time. I will tell you one thing is that we're set on schedule to meet the standards of the Paris Accord ahead of time.
Yeah.
Marine Interfaith Climate Action. The other thing is something you guys have been involved in. You may remember a few years ago there was a pagan community statement on the environment, which can be found at ecopagan.com.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the people who was involved in that wanted to start an action team with CCL, and I'm surprised it wasn't mentioned. CCL is Citizens Climate Lobby, and they have a lot of up-to-date information.
Yep.
They have tons of resources. They have a spirituality action team. They're broken into action teams, and they have an interfaith action team, but we also have one called Earth-Based Spirituality Action Team.
Mm-hmm.
It's just new. We meet once a month for half an hour online. So it's not a big, sacrifice, and great networking can be done. It's EBSAP once you get to CCL. And I'd like to invite people that it's the second Monday of the month.
Please join us.
So if we go to CCL, we can find
it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Wait, get
you
the mic. Yeah, this gentleman here.
I really need to say this because I think it's
okay. For those people that you're trying to convince that a couple of degrees warming is different, make it personal. Your body temperature is 98.6. If you were to raise it 3 to 4 degrees or 5 degrees and it stayed there forever, how would you feel? If it escalated even more, how would you feel? If you make it personal like that, even if it's to a Trump supporter or whatever, just get, we've all had fevers and we know how horrible they are, but just think that's what the Earth is right now and it's not gonna get any better. So that's, if you can take that little argument out and just say, hey, just that, just make it personal with body temperature and how many more degrees it would take for your body to not be able to survive that.
And we still have time, I'd like to mention one other thing.
So the pagan community has a different worldview to offer. So I encourage everyone to do everything within your power to help create a habitable world for the future of life on this planet.
Thank you all for being here. I know that we're all in this together. And I guess the final thing I want to say is that when I think of diversity, I think of biodiversity. I care as much about the sequoias and the otters and their future as much as I do about ours. And if there's anything I keep faith in, it's what I keep learning in life, which is that breakdowns lead to breakthroughs. I believe there's a breakthrough from this. I'm terrified about the breakdown, but I trust somehow Mama Gaia's got her own back, and she's got our back, and I want her to know that I'm an ally, and I'm with her, and help me to be in service to her in any way I can. And I look forward, if I get the opportunity, to what those breakthroughs could be.
Healing and wellness to planet Earth. Thank you all for being here. They gave us the sign to go forth. So thank you for being here and go green!
And I have some green out in the back.
Ooh,
and we will be sending those handouts to you. They're chock full of info,
guys. Bank. things I believe.
And thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.